Sidra. Sidra didn't care much for waiting, not out in public at least. Installed in a ship, she could have sat for hours, days even, without needing much external input. But with no systems to monitor but her own, and no linkings to keep her occupied, waiting was a deeply irritating way to spend time. However, this wait, she'd been assured, was worth it. She looked at the others standing in line with her. Pepper, Blue, dozens of strangers, all anticipating entry into the Aurora Pavilion. The never-ending night was thick with the sounds of sapient chatter, the smells of alcohol, and varied kinds of smoke, the flicker of luminescent moths trying bravely to nip at open cups and sticky flasks. If the people around her minded the wait, they didn't show it. This was a Shimmerquick party, and apparently standing around doing nothing was a fair price to pay for what was about to happen. Shimmerquick, the GC reference files had said, was a very old holiday. Long before the Aeluans achieved spaceflight, the celebration was one of the few en masse interactions between male and female villages. Back then, Shimmerquick lasted for over a 10-day and had no spoken name, as the silent Aeluans had yet to encounter the alien practice of auditory language. But Aeluans had been an integrated species for over a millennium, and their traditions were no longer bound to a single planet. Though Shimmerquick was, at its core, a fertility festival created by a species with a storied history of difficulty in that department, it had become a popular shared tradition in many mixed colonies, Port Coryell included. As Pepper had put it, there aren't many species that don't enjoy a big party, especially if its central theme is getting laid. Granted, Aeluans had a clear social distinction between recreational and procreative coupling, and Shimmerquick was much more a celebration of life and ancestry than of lust. But apparently that nuance was either lost on or of small consequence to others in attendance. Sidra knew her understanding of such things was limited, but it did seem that most species generally didn't need much context as to why a party was happening. Sidra eyed the line stretching far back beyond them. "This is one of the smaller celebrations?" she asked. "Yeah," Blue nodded. The ones on the light side are huge. They're also a complete clusterfuck," Pepper added, "and entirely tourists. Everybody here," she pointed up and down the line, "either lives here or is with someone who does. I also know folks who run this place, which is a big bonus. We also thought an indoor venue would be more comfortable," Blue said, smiling at Sidra. Sidra was a little embarrassed to realize he meant more comfortable for her, but she was grateful, too. This was her first holiday. She didn't want to spoil the fun for Pepper and Blue by not having a good time herself. As the line moved forward, Sidra picked up the first sign of an acquired multicultural tradition: music. A species without a sense of hearing had no need for a soundtrack, but clearly they'd gotten the memo that other people couldn't imagine a party without it. Sidra enjoyed the thump of the drums, the jangle and swing laced through. She liked the patterns within the sounds, the way they made organics move. The non-Aeluan celebrants they shared the line with were following their host species' lead as well. With few exceptions, everyone arriving at the event was wearing at least one item in a shade of gray, a hue that, on an Aeluan, would make the colors on their ever-changing cheek patches stand out all the more. For other species, any sort of gray would do, but for Aeluans, more traditional rules were at play. Among their galactic neighbors, Aeluans used the usual set of male-female neutral pronouns that any species would understand, but among themselves, they were a four-gendered society. At Shimmerquick, their clothing reflected this. Black for those who produced eggs, white for those who fertilized them, dark gray for the Shans, who cyclically shifted reproductive roles, and light gray for those who could do neither. It was striking to see such a delineated display in a species whose sexual dimorphism was relatively slight compared to other species, and whose apparel had little to no gender distinction on any other day. Even though the clothing cues could not be missed, Sidra was glad she had downloaded additional social references before leaving home, as the latter two genders were impossible to distinguish through physical features alone. Shuns changed reproductive function multiple times throughout a standard and were always considered fully male or female, depending on the current situation. Calling a shun by a neutral pronoun was considered an insult, unless they were in the middle of a shift. Such terms were reserved for those too young, too old, or simply unable to procreate. As neutral adults of breeding age looked exactly like their fertile counterparts, they generally did not mind the assumptions of other species where gendered pronouns were concerned, but appreciated it when the correct terms were used. Despite knowing that the kit's human appearance would absolve her of any pronoun mishaps, Sidra appreciated the color-coded clothing. She loathed the idea of getting such things wrong. Sidra glanced down at what the kit was wearing. A top printed with white and gray triangles, a darker gray pair of trousers, and a close-cut jacket to give the impression that Darkseid's cold air affected her. Sidra's picks, Pepper's credits. Sidra had felt awkward about that, as she was beginning to feel about most purchases made for her benefit. Her hosts didn't seem to mind in the slightest, but she wasn't sure what she was providing them with in return, other than potential trouble. Blue patted down his pockets as the line crept forward. Ah, damn. I forgot my... Pepper reached into her pocket and presented a packet of mints. Blue accepted it with a grin and a kiss. Sidra swung the kit's eyes away, letting them have their moment. It seemed like a nice sort of thing to have. They reached the door at last, and two young Aeluans greeted them, a boy and a girl, both clad in neutral gray. A painted stripe of the same color hugged the lower edges of their iridescent cheek patches. The talk boxes in their throats and speech processing implants in their foreheads were far less decorative than the ones worn by adults, but this made sense. These implants were temporary and would be swapped out as the children grew. "Shimmer quick and shimmer often, friends," the boy said with practiced pomp. Xur's silver skin was heavily dusted with glitter, and the pulsing blue in Xur's cheeks indicated she looked pride in Xur's role that evening. "How many are you?" "Three," Pepper said, holding out her wrist patch. Blue did the same, as did Sidra. The boys scanned their wrists in turn, while the girl picked up a pot of light gray face paint and gestured the humans forward. She had three other pots on hand, each colored for a respective gender. Pepper bent down. The girl stuck her delicate thumb in the pot, then drew a thick, short line along each side of Pepper's jaw, the rough equivalent of where her cheek patches would end, if she had any. Sidra noted the symbolism with keen interest as the same was repeated for Blue, then herself. She and her friends were being designated as the equivalent of neutral Aeluans for the evening. And with the exception of children, neutrals were welcome partners in romantic relationships. Mainstream Aeluan aversion to interspecies coupling was known far and wide, and given that the taboo stemmed from a concern regarding the ability to further the species, marking aliens as potential sexual partners at a fertility festival was a bold statement. Such a gesture would not have been made in, say, the Aeluan capital of Sohep Free, or likely even the gatherings on Coriol's light side. The Aeluans in attendance at the Aurora were clearly of a more radical stance than most of their peers. Sidra was beginning to understand why Pepper and Blue had chosen this party. They walked down a coolly lit ramp, which curved and swayed as it wound its way underground. "No red reed in common areas," a printed wall sign read. "Save it for the smoking rooms." "How come?" Sidra asked. She'd seen about a dozen different recreational substances being consumed in line, including some that required a pipe. Makes Aelyuan's eyes itch, Pepper said, which I imagine would be absolute hell in a closed space like this. Down, down, down they walked, music growing louder, the line getting ever more excited. All at once, the wait was over. They arrived. A deluge of information hit Sidra's pathways, but in a way that exhilarated her. There was as much happening as there would be in a busy market square, but there were edges here. Walls. Her field of observation was instantly defined. Her protocols did not reach endlessly outward. The same was true whenever she went down to the tech caves, but the activity there was often confined within shops and behind doors, places she saw only hints of as she walked by. The main hall of Aurora, on the other hand, was a wide open space filled with booths and tables and accessible displays. The caves were a series of closed cupboards. This was a buffet. Her field of vision was a nuisance, as always, but much of what overwhelmed her topside and bored her at home was absent here. This was a party. "Look at you!" Pepper laughed. Sidra realized the kit was smiling with an open mouth. She wrangled it into a less effusive expression. "It's very exciting." "Good," Blue said, squeezing the kit's shoulder. "That's great." "First order of business," Pepper said, clapping her hands together. "Drinks." Sidra took in as much as she could as they searched for a refreshment vendor. Aside from the decorations, braided garlands of leaves dyed in monochrome, hanging metal charms displaying superstitious numbers for good luck and fertility, she had little immediate impression that this was a specific cultural event. On the contrary, everything about the happenings around them screamed Port Coriel. She saw an Andrisk acrobat playing with a shielded ball of water, a Harmagian laughing at a Laru's joke, a group of humans blissfully plugged into a portable sim hub. There were places to sit, places to dance, nooks filled with cushions and lighted globes and shouting faces, clouds of smoke, not red reed, she hoped, appearing and disappearing. A cacophony of smells, sweat, slime, food, feathers, flowers. A merchant selling handmade jewelry. A modder showing off a pet bot with webbed wings and gem-like eyes. A tray of sugar snaps upended. A tray of fried root vegetables devoured. The whirs and clicks of gadgets and implants piercing the sound of overlapping languages, all underlaid with the thick thum, thum, thum that made the dancers buck and sway. Sidra processed, but the walls kept her from stretching too far. It felt good. It felt right. "Pepper!" a voice cried. A male Andrisk, waving at them from the opposite side of a circular bar. Sidra didn't recognize him, but Pepper obviously did. She hurried towards him, hands above her head. A Harmagian saw Pepper coming and made room for her at the bar, tentacles curling with respect. Sidra felt a bit of awe warm through her pathways. Was there anyone on this moon who didn't know Pepper? "Hist ka ethresk!" Pepper said, leaning over the bar to give the Andrisk a hug. "Good to see you, friend." Her pronunciation was rough, but the Andrisk didn't seem to mind in the slightest. "Ses sek es kit riksh ix tesh." "I was wondering when you'd get here." He reached over to Blue, hugging him across the bar as well. "It's not a party without you two." His gray-green eyes flicked to Sidra. "And who's this?" Pepper put her palm between the kit's shoulder blades. "My good friend Sidra, recently arrived at the port, and just as recently hired by yours truly." She nodded at the Andrisk. "Sidra, this is Isak, one of the finest bartenders on this rock." "One of?" Isak said, flicking his tongue. "Who else?" Blue grinned teasingly. "Perek Tek at the Sandhouse pours faster than you." Isak rolled his eyes.
He's got tentacles. That's hardly fair.
He tussled Blue's hair, then turned his attention to the kit.
Sidra, it's a pleasure. First drink's on me. What can I get you?
Oh. Sidra didn't know how to respond. Having the ability to ingest fluids wasn't the same as knowing which one she was supposed to purchase. I don't... Pepper gave Sidra a secret, reassuring glance. It's customary on Shimmerquick to drink something that comes from the same place you do. Or the same culture, at least. As close as you can manage.
Ah, Isek said, raising a claw. That's what you buy for yourself. If someone else is buying, then it has to be something from Xurholm. So as I'm buying, he gave a little bow, you're getting something my home city of Reskit is famous for. Ever tried Tishsa?
I haven't, no. Isek plucked a tall, thin ceramic bottle from the table behind him.
Tishsa is made from the sap of a tree whose pronunciation I won't burden you with. Grows in the marshlands east of Reskit. There are two traditional ways of serving it, neat and very, very hot. Or,
he poured a stream of inky brown liquid into a tiny, bowl-like cup with a subtle pour spout.
At room temperature, with,
he uncapped a second, smaller bottle.
A drop of nectar syrup to counter the bitterness, and
a small box was produced.
A dash of salt to balance the whole thing out.
He gave the concoction two quick stirs with a long rod, then slid the cup toward Sidra. Sidra thanked him and accepted the Tishsa, aware of Isek's expectant gaze. She brought the cup to the kit's lips and poured the contents inside. A rushing river, burning paper, a forest thick with fog.
Wow, Sidra said. That's really nice.
Isek nodded proudly, his feathers bobbing. The humans looked delighted.
How's it taste? Blue asked.
Sidra answered with the truth.
Like a forest.
Pepper beamed, then turned her attention to Isek.
So, what you got for colony kids? She said, gesturing at herself and Blue.
For planet-side humans, only the finest,
Isek said with a mischievous glint. He covered his hand with a thick towel, reached below the counter, and pulled out a sealed, chilled bottle. Pepper and Blue hooted with laughter.
Oh, no,
Pepper said with the sort of tone that implied the opposite. Blue ran his fingers down his cheeks and exhaled.
We're in for a night.
He took the bottle and held it out for Sidra to see. White Dune Distillery, the label read. Kick-ass kick from Gobi 6.
What is it? Sidra asked.
Kick could mean anything from ale to wine to spirits, depending on where the speaker was from. Slang was infuriating that way. Blue turned the bottle to the back label. Ingredients. Whatever we could grow this year, plus water.
Gotta love the independent colonies, Pepper said.
She made a grabbing motion toward Isek, who placed a small glass in her hand. Blue uncapped the bottle and poured. Pepper puffed out her cheeks, then threw the drink back. Her face contorted into a puzzle of emotions as she swished and swallowed.
Oh, stars!
Pepper rasped, laughing.
Why could we not be from Reskit?
If you hate it,
Isek started. Pepper shook her head.
Nope. It's good for me to know what it feels like for a fuel line to be cleaned out. Professional development and all.
She patted Blue's chest.
Tomorrow's gonna be a rough morning.
Some friendly conversation continued. The well-being of the rust bucket, the decor of the party, the current gossip from Isek's feather family, but Sidra shifted that process to the background. These were the kinds of conversations she was privy to all the time. The Aurora was new and vibrant. She watched as a group of Aeluan children blew handfuls of glitter over each other, dancing excitedly but making no sound at all.
She watched as a massive Quellan, an exile judging by the harsh branding stamped along her shell, apologized profusely for getting one of her segmented legs stuck in some decorative fabric draped around a vendor's booth. She watched service drones flying drinks and food orders back and forth, back and forth. She wondered if the drones were intelligent. She wondered how much they were aware of. Blue noticed that Sidra's attention had strayed, and he gave Pepper a subtle nudge. They excused themselves from the bar, assuring Isaac that they'd be back later. "Come on," Pepper said. "Let's go check out the main event." They walked into a large, circular area, and the multicultural atmosphere vanished. This space was filled with angled tents decorated with lavish garlands and lights, eagerly staffed by adult Aeluans and their respective children. This was the creche display, the central point of any Shimmerquick celebration. This was where professional parents advertised their business to potential mothers. "You know how this works?" Pepper asked under her breath. "Yes," Sidra said. She brought up her reference files, eager to compare her notes with the real thing. "Can I look around? Is that allowed?"
"Oh, yeah, go for it," Pepper said. "They don't mind looky-loos. Just keep your respectful distance when a balsan takes place. Other species getting mixed up in that isn't cool, even in this crowd."
Sidra wouldn't have dared anyway. The balsan ritual dance was the hallmark of the holiday, and despite its Hanto lone name, it was wholly, quintessentially Aeluan. An Aeluan woman might become fertile 2 or 3 times in her life, if at all, a state visually characterized by an increased brightness in her scales. In the right light, a shimmer. The balsan was an ancient tradition, once thought to encourage a woman's body to produce a viable egg. Science dictated otherwise, but the dance remained, partly out of cultural heritage, partly out of the mindset of, well, they can't hurt. There were 7 different creches representing themselves in the display. Traditionally, creches were comprised of 3 to 5 virile males, or Shans, but women and neutrals were included in the modern mix. Parenting was considered a full-time job, and not something to be undertaken alone. As a woman had no way to plan for if and when she might become fertile, the idea of her abandoning her own profession to look after an unplanned child was unthinkable. Granted, she'd have to take time off for fertility leave, but on that point, Aeluan society was accommodating to a fault. In her research, Sidra had run across an absurd historical anecdote about a pre-spaceflight ground war that had been amicably paused when one of the most prominent generals started to shimmer. Sidra wasn't sure any species took anything as seriously as Aeluans did breeding. She wandered around the display, fascinated by the elaborate adornments. It was a competition, in essence, a trade show. She stopped in front of one of the tents. The leaf garlands draped around it were huge and laced with glowing globes full of... The kit blinked. There was some kind of glowing liquid inside them, and it was moving, making tiny waves like a cresting sea. Powered by bots, most likely, but stars, it was striking. "Pretty, aren't they?" The kit nearly jumped. One of the creche's parents had appeared beside her, just out of sight. "Very," Sidra said. "Your whole display is beautiful." "Thank you," the Aeluan said. He looked at his tent approvingly. "We've been working for weeks on this. The kids helped, of course."
"Would you mind if I ask you some questions about all of this?"
"Not at all. Is this your first Shimmerquick?"
"Yes. Is it that obvious?" The Aeluan laughed. "You have the look of someone who's seeing things for the first time. Don't be embarrassed. I'm here to educate as much as celebrate. That's what being a parent's all about."
Sidra liked this man. "Have you always been a parent? Professionally speaking, I mean. Oh, yes. It takes a lot of school, so if you don't get started early, it can be hard to catch up.
What kind of schooling?
There are two different layers to it, the Eluan said. His tone was authoritative, his words ready. This was clearly his field.
At the core, you've got to get university certification for parenting, just as you do for, say, being a doctor or an engineer. No offense to you or your species, but going into the business of creating life without any sort of formal prep is, he laughed, it's baffling. But then, I'm biased.
The kid smiled. I understand.
To get your certification, he continued, clearly on a roll, you have to take courses in child development, basic medical care, and interpersonal communication. That's the first layer. On top of that, if you want any sort of viability in this field, you have to add specialization courses, both for the benefit of the kids and the mothers. Me, for example, I'm skilled in massage, basic tutoring, and emotional counseling. Lo, over there, he's great at arts and crafts, and he can cook like a dream. Say is our gardener, and does all our home repair and decorating, too. A good creche needs a blend of skills in order to be successful, especially where the mothers are concerned. Fertility leave is a big deal, and it's a lot of fun, but it's a stressful thing for any woman at first. It's 2 unplanned months away from her normal life. She's got to drop any projects she's got going on at work. She's got to cancel whatever other plans she's made. If she's a spacer, she's got to find the nearest place with an Eluan community before she misses her shot. And unless her romantic partner can take that time off too, she's got to be separated from her most important person for a bit. She's got to go live with strangers and have sex with them. And all the while, there's the worry that she might go through all that trouble and still not have a fertilized egg at the end of it. And then there's the business of carrying said egg and giving birth a month later, which, while not nearly the bother it is for your species, would be nerve-wracking for anyone. So we do our best to make the whole experience as rewarding as possible. It's a break, a vacation. We do everything we can to make the women that come to us as comfortable and happy as possible. Our beds are wonderful. Our rooms are clean. Our food is outstanding. We've got a beautiful garden and huge saltwater baths. We're experienced lovers, and we put a lot of effort into making sure that coupling multiple times a day is something to look forward to. We give our mothers space when they need it, and company when they crave it. We provide quality medical care when it's time to give birth, and beyond that, we assure them that their child is going to be well looked after. They're welcome to spend time with the other children there, join them for playtime or studying if they want to. Not all women do. Some aren't worried about that aspect of it, or they just don't like kids much. Others need a lot of reassurance that the little person they're leaving behind is going to be okay.
Do mothers come back to visit?
Usually, yes. It's not always possible. Here at the port, we get a lot of spacers who have somewhere else to go once their shimmer's over. There's contact, at least. Our kids get SIB calls. They get presents. A lot of species have this conception that our children don't know their mothers, but that's just not true. Eluan mothers love their children as deeply as anyone does. That's why they entrust them to professionals who can give them the best upbringing possible. He glanced over to one of his fellow fathers, who had given him a nonverbal signal Sidra had not caught. How did Eluans detect such things in the middle of so much activity? They possessed electroreception as well as sight, she knew, but to her knowledge, cheek colors didn't give off any additional sensory signals. They had to have an impressive attention to detail, A good quality, she imagined, for a parent. You'll have to excuse me, the Aeluan man said. An Aeluan woman had entered the creche circle. One of the children led her by the hand to the father's, who greeted her with an effusive flurry of color. Sidra longed to be able to understand the conversation, but even though she could presumably download a lexicon of Aeluan language, she wasn't sure the kit's visual sensors could parse things fast enough. Their cheeks were swirling as quick and varied as the skin on a bubble. The woman pressed her palm to each of the forefathers' chests, an initiation for a Balson. One of the creche fathers was clad in neutral gray, and he stepped back as the three white-clad men circled her. The children sprang into action, lining up with the neutral father in a way that suggested they wanted everyone to know they'd been practicing this. He took the hands of the two closest to him, meeting their eyes with obvious affection. The neutrals began to stamp their feet on the ground in a synchronized pattern, left, left, right, left, 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 right. The white-clad men and the black-clad woman began to move in rhythm, circling and spinning in a curious way, never missing a beat. Sidra was fascinated. Presumably, their auditory implants were picking up the stamping, but this dance had been done since before the Aeluans taught their brains to process sound. Could they feel the vibrations in the ground? She found it likely and wished she could share the experience. She watched the woman, covered in glitter, dancing in the hope that she might wake up to her skin, shimmering on its own one day. She thought about the menu of services the parent had outlined. Massages, baths, places to sleep, people to mate with. Sidra could understand the desire for these things, in concept. She couldn't help but feel a little jealous of the woman, even though jealousy was a waste of time. She wasn't jealous of what the woman was receiving, exactly, but of how confident she looked. How confident they all looked. They each had a role, a place, a color. They knew where and how they fit. Hey! It was Blue, standing beside her. The kit startled. She willed it to stay calm. Stars, but she was tired of not being able to see behind the kit's head. Did everything have to be a surprise? We bumped into some friends, and we were gonna hang out with them at their table. You can stay here if you want to. No, I'll come along, Sidra said. She followed him out of the creche display and toward Pepper, who was animatedly telling a story to a hodgepodge group of modders. A table sounded good. Sidra had seen the seating nooks, each with a table nestled into a low, freestanding, three-sided wall. Three walls meant there was a corner seat. That was the place for her.